Mining rules, certainly in this country, where mining companies are able to go pretty well where they want in pursuit of the riches that may lie below the ground, and it really doesn't matter who that ground belongs to. Sharon Munro became concerned for her grandchildren when she saw what mining was doing to her Hunter Valley region. She watched health problems increase as the air became polluted and began a fact-finding journey around Australia to see how other communities were being affected by the miners' march into rural Australia. The result is her book, Rich Land, Wasteland. Annie Haswell asked her how farmers feel when a mining company arrives at their gate with permission to explore.
This feeling of absolute helplessness and frustration that in the end mining will get its way and people will have to give up what might be six generations of farming history on that land, as I struck often in Queensland, and lose the future that they and their children and grandchildren would have continued doing. Or even if they've only been there 20 years and it was their little bit of rural paradise, you know, they were just hobby farmers or retirees. It doesn't matter. The point is that mining law trumps everything, and I just think that's totally wrong these days, because it isn't to keep the lights on, it's just another business, just another mainly foreign-owned export business.
Can you describe what it's like to live with mining, which is a 24-hour industry?
Mostly it is, and that's one of the things that at least the government could do, particularly with the low-frequency noise. The Cumbo Valley, north of Mudgee there, New South Wales, was one of the most awful experiences that I was told about. And they had, they were told there had been no impact whatsoever, not dust, not noise. And from the very first day that the mine started up, people were looking for where the bulldozer was in their valley, you know, so they could get them to come and do a dam. And it was the mine, just, you know, over the ridge, it was the mine. And then audible noise became incredible. People couldn't sleep. The mine went longer and longer hours until it was going all night. People couldn't sleep and were screaming. Other people had low-frequency impact that was so bad, you know, they were being rushed to hospital, especially elderly people with heart rhythms going crazy and blood pressure dropping. And yet it just kept being ignored, denied by the mine, because the conditions are so vague with so many loopholes that even the Environmental Defenders Office couldn't take them to court on it. So to me, the position of power that the government's put them in makes, you know, from the noise and the dust, people are just victims, like, you know, as in Camberwell in the Hunter Valley and so many other places where they might have five or six mines around them. And, yeah, they've virtually just become prisoners in the house, air conditioners on, TV volume up, and hope you don't breathe in too deeply.
Mm. It all goes back to the Mining Act too, doesn't it, which is an extraordinarily powerful act in Australia.
And many people see the government as the person that they are angry with, because they have allowed this situation to continue from days when it was, you know, they were state-owned coal mines and they were to keep the lights on for Australians. And in those days, people would have seen it like, you know, when you've got a freeway, it's got to go in, so on, or a dam's got to go in, and it's for the good of all, so you don't like it, but you can kind of accept it. But when it's just for a private business to make more billions, that's what really gets people, and that the government supports through their mining laws and through the approvals process that they set up are on the side of these companies and not on the side of their own people. That's what really hurts.
Now, it's an issue that has gained enormous traction. We've got the Lock the Gates Alliance. We've even got broadcaster Alan Jones, who certainly can pull a populist audience behind the farmers on this one. Are there any signs that there is a chance of winning this battle against endless mining?
Well, I mean, I spoke to Alan Jones yesterday morning, and he certainly was very supportive. And I was at the New South Wales Farmers Rally on Tuesday, where there were thousands and thousands of people, and many, many of those people had never been to anything like this in the past. I think that the coalition of what would have once been disparate forces, if you like, between environmentalists and farmers has escalated hugely in the last 18 months, and it's just going to keep on growing, because it's common sense, we all know it, that we need food and water security and that people are being treated disgracefully. I think it's going to be a raising of voices, and my book was written to reach people in the city as well as those in the country, so that we've got more voices saying to the government, this isn't how we want Australia to develop, isn't how we want it to be now. And if you don't stop this path that you're taking us down at the behest of these private companies, of coal and gas companies, then, you know, we're just going to stop you. So civil disobedience seems to me to be inevitable. The government's forcing people to do blockades and to just, you know, refuse to comply to these biased mining laws.